Life.
A podcast of the cinema.
And influenza.
Yes.
My name is Influenza.
Mm-hmm.
Influenza Jones. Also, your name is Alonzo Duralde.
Yes, and you are Dave White, and it's an Easter miracle that we're even recording a show this weekend. Because you were felled this week.
There are no miracles. There is only science. Yes. And
the science of someone not getting a flu shot and then getting the flu.
Why don't you eat me?
Why don't you get vaccinated for free at the Kaiser? Like me.
Listen. Before we get into this, you're the reviews editor at therap.com.
That's correct.
You're also one of the perpetual four at What the Flick.
Correct.
I'm a film critic also. I sometimes write for The Rap.
You do?
Mostly. I mail Patreon subscribers their items.
Yes.
Although not lately.
Not this week.
I tell you, Monday and Tuesday, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get so much accomplished this week. Yeah, every Monday, I have big plans for my week. And very often I accomplish those tasks.
Like Let's Active, you have big plans for everybody.
I do, and I have an at-a-glance, and I keep track. So this week, I was, you know, my to-do list was lengthy. Running around.
It runneth over,
went
I'm sure.
Went to Costco on Monday. I was like, I'm going to get a ham. Big ham plans. Easter.
Right.
Today's Easter, after all. Tuesday, I started feeling... I knew I felt tired on Monday. Tuesday, I felt even more run down, but I just kept gunning. You know, I have a lot to get accomplished.
The way you do.
Wednesday morning, I woke up, and I just... felt like I'd been run over. But I got up and I finished a work deadline. And about 10 o'clock that morning, I said to you, I have to go lie down for a little while. 6 hours later... at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I got up out of bed and thought, okay, this day's been wasted. And I was so sore. All of me, just my body felt ruined. And I didn't know why.
And you said your tonsils were...
Well, that Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. Thursday morning, I woke up again and I didn't feel as brutally sore and tired and exhausted. But my throat was sore, and I looked in the mirror, and they were just inflamed and red. And I thought, great. This is bad. I don't like this. And then Friday morning, I went to the doctor. Well, I called Thursday, and Kaiser said, your primary care physician is available to see you in June.
Thanks, Doc in a Box.
That is not a comedic exaggeration. No. That is what they told me.
Yes.
And I laughed and laughed. I said, perhaps I'll be dead by then. So I have to come into urgent care in the morning, which is what I did. And the doctor saw me and he said, well, you don't... They tested me immediately for strep. They said, you don't have strep. This is flu. Did you get a flu shot? And I was... No.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like tail end, right? This is tail end flu season. Ain't nobody getting flu right now. It's April. Flu season's basically over.
You're usually ahead of the curve.
I know.
You're a come lately on this one.
So this is what this means. This is my first flu-ish.
Uh-huh.
Oh, really? I have never gotten a flu shot because I have never gotten the flu. I get little colds here and there sometimes. Mm-hmm. Rarely. Now, I'll get a sinus infection. I'll get a sinus infection that'll knock me on my ass for like a week, but that's different.
That's allergies.
That's allergy based, and that's an infection, and you need antibiotics and all of that. You gotta cough for like 5 weeks. This was confusing to me, though, because I didn't have a fever. And not a serious cough, but I was coughing. There was some congestion, but I just felt destroyed from the inside. So I've literally done F all, basically, this week. Like, I've accomplished very little. We'd scrapped podcast plans. Today is Easter Sunday. It's 3:50 p.m. on an Easter Sunday afternoon. There should be actually 10 other people in this home right now, all of whom were going to bring their own cooked items. And I have a giant ham in the fridge that was going to be roasted. Desserts that were going to be made. Nothing.
None of that happened.
Friday, I emailed everyone. I said, guess what's not happening? There's not going to be Easter Sunday dinner in this house. I'm looking at that box of sugar corn pops over there. That might be dinner. Who knows what I'm going to do?
Boost that immune system.
I feel good today.
Good.
I feel after about 48 hours of almost constant sleep. Like, yes. I've done very little with the past 2 to 3 days of my life except lie in bed, listen to S-Town. I'm on chapter 4, by the way. Mm-hmm. Out of 7. I'm really hooked. I'll tell you all about it when it's over.
I haven't started yet. Don't tell me anything.
I'm not. I'm very considerate of you.
I am backed up on my own podcast so much right now.
I know.
Finally, today, I finished listening to Bibbs and Whitney interviewing Joel Hodgson.
Yeah.
But it's Joel Hodgson's fault that I'm backed up because 14 new Mystery Science Theater 3000 episodes just dropped
on
Netflix.
You had to watch all of them.
I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there.
I watched 3 of them with you. Mm-hmm. One of them I was falling asleep quite a bit.
Yes.
Through.
Through no fault of the program.
Yes. So I feel like 1,000% better today.
Good.
So, of course, what I've done today is tidied up and paid some bills, and now we're podcasting, and I'm feeling pretty great.
Slow ride.
I know. I haven't really done anything. I haven't gone anywhere. No. I've just been awake and up and around.
Well, you know, you're a shut-in, so.
Here's my new thing. When you say that to me, I'm not even going to respond. I'm not even going to dignify your falsehoods with the truth, because the truth is that I'm a vibrant human being who walks out of the house and goes off on adventures in this great city in which we live.
Well, you say untrue things about me all the time.
Not a fact. No. You're still holding on to a 5-year-ago joke I made about you being a Holocaust denier.
Right, which you then recently amped up by deciding I was racist, too. I forget and remember why now.
You deserve it.
Uh-huh.
Well, you deserve it.
Then you deserve being called a shut-in.
Husbandly privilege means that I get to say anything about you that I want in public.
That's my husband.
You do not have that same privilege.
Oh, yes, I do.
No.
Yes, I do. Because I'm also a husband in this case, in this scenario.
Who's more of a husband, though? Who's the greater example of husbandry in this husband situation?
Me, because I did some dishes this week.
Oh, that's right. You did. You washed some dishes while I was sick. You also charred me up a nice little grilled cheese sandwich. That was very kind of you.
I made several runs to the grocery store to get you Eggo waffles.
You got me some coffee Häagen-Dazs ice cream. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
You're quite nice. I'll stay married to you. As long as, you know, Gorsuch doesn't annul us or something.
Let him try.
But we have movies to talk about.
Yes. Yes, we do.
The most biggest one.
Mm-hmm. The Fate of the Furious.
Has made.
All the money.
Has made $500 million this weekend.
Globally, yes.
Yeah. I think it's made like 100 and something here, and 400-ish in Jakarta. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Everywhere else.
Well, you don't. There's not a lot of translation involved for these
movies. No.
Cars go fast. Go.
This installment may have the least dialogue of any of the films.
Well, I think so far, as you pointed out, I think this is also the movie that's pointing us towards eventual sequels with all driverless cars.
Yeah. Well, they set it up in this one.
Yes.
Charlize Theron. Okay, you guys, let's lay some ground rules here. This is opening weekend.
Yes.
Can we decide that there do not exist such a thing as spoilers in a Fast and Furious movie?
I was going to say, I think any weekend there's really no such thing. You could tell me now what the 9th one is about, and it wouldn't be a spoiler. Because no one's going for the plot twists.
The only Fast and Furious movie... there are two. The only two that had what I would have called twists are 4, where Letty fake dies.
Right.
And 6, where Giselle and Han actual die.
Yes. Well, and you could also make a case for the post-credits button on 5, in which we find out that Letty is not dead.
Okay, yes. God.
That was a moment.
Do you remember that day?
When everything we knew was changed?
I remember that day. I remember that moment. I remember thinking, oh, Letty is alive. Oh, God, please, where is number 6?
This changes everything.
Right now. Or number 5. What was it? Yeah, number 5. Where is number 6? I need number 6 right now.
I remember that screening. Like, nobody was expecting...
People flipping out screening.
Nobody was expecting a post-credit thing, and people were sort of filing out, and I think maybe a security guard was saying, you guys might not want to leave yet.
You should stay.
Yeah. And everybody lost it. Like, sorry, Marvel. This is, like, one of the best of the...
That's how you do it.
This is falafel. Sorry. Falafel. Shawarma.
Shawarma. That's how you give them the shawarma.
This is how you shawarma.
Okay, so get back to the driverless cars. Charlize Theron is the villain.
Yes.
In this one. And she releases... it's so great. She releases a swarm of driverless cars in New York that she hacks.
Never have I been so happy to have a car that still needs a key.
Right.
Because apparently, like, the idea being is if you've got a fob, that your car could be started remotely by super hacker Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
And forced to cause mayhem in the streets of Manhattan.
Like flying out of skyscraper windows.
Yes.
Beautiful. She's the villain. And another example of her villainy is she makes dumb go rogue.
And turn against?
The family.
Not the family.
The family. You know, those people that aren't related to each other.
No.
That are the family.
The hashtag family.
And I like her as a villain quite a bit. First of all, I believe that for the role, I believe that Charlize Theron injected weird amounts of Botox into her face.
I was wondering about that.
I don't think in real life that she does this. The reason I say that is because I've stood right next to her,
right,
in public, and she's the kind of beautiful that blinds you like the sun. Mm-hmm. The kind of beautiful that you know that as she ages, even if she wrinkles up, she's still going to be better looking than all other human beings.
I saw this movie with a friend of ours who knows about such things. And he seemed to think there was a lot of digital
shine
things happening on her face.
Maybe.
Not that she needs them, but it makes her into Lady Robotica.
Yeah. Like that. I watched it and I thought, what's her face looks really strange. And then I thought, this is for the role.
Yeah.
This is her doing the opposite of Monster.
Too far in the other direction.
In the other direction. Not too far. Exactly the right amount of far.
Sure.
Because she looks unearthly. And
although that hair needs a protein rinse.
That hair is so fantastic because it's the worst kind of, like, I might be getting dreads. Who knows what I'll do, you know? She's perfect.
Also, and I swim every day and I don't condition.
Right. She lives in a villain plane.
Yes.
She lives in the sky.
And she stays ahead of satellite bouncing, tracking thingy stuff.
That plane is zigzagging its way through the cosmos.
Yes.
She lives in the sky in a plane that is essentially never lands and is her apartment. And she has a huge walk-in closet.
Yes.
With, like, shoes and things all, like, perfectly aligned. But it's also got all her weapons.
Yes.
Which are coordinated to her outfits.
Right.
She has a femur on a stick as a art next to her throne area. I look off to the side as she's talking to Dom. I thought, what kind of bone is that on the stick? That's like a human. That's like a leg bone. That's art in her next to her. She's like, this is from my collection. I harvested this femur myself. I'm a villain.
Although, as Matt Singer pointed out, that you would put Furiosa in a car movie and not let her get behind the wheel does seem a little bit of a...
She's done that already. She has nothing to prove. Lives in the sky now.
Also, it turns out, she's been the villain of the last, like, two or three movies.
Yeah. Like, you didn't even know.
This movie, by the way, really expects that you are up on these on the story. Like it like I didn't know this was going to be on the quiz, but the stuff that happens in 6 and 7 actually matters.
Minor characters from part
5,
2 and 4 and 5, they pop up for like 10 seconds arguing with it. Remember those guys?
Oh yeah.
The comic relief arguing guys.
The 5 from 5.
They show up. Yeah.
A character from 5 you kind of forgot about is a major player in this story.
Yeah. So I'm not going to give away everything.
No.
But Charlize makes Dom go rogue. There's a reason. It's a real good one.
Yes.
And everyone else is real angry at Dom. Except Letty. You know why? She's ride or die. She knows. She knows that ain't her man.
Sweetie, you know why they're angry?
Well, they're furious.
They're the Furious. It's in the title. So furious.
But Letty, every time you see Letty, and every time Dom is doing something horrible.
Yes.
She has this look on her face like, mm-mm. Nope. I know better. There's some reason. That's not Dominic Toretto. Because I know him.
So is this the he hit me and it felt like a kiss of car movies?
What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you could read into it that, like, you know, that she's the wife who keeps rationalizing the, you know, like, her husband's abhorrent
behavior. No. That's not this. That's not this because she knows.
Ah, okay.
She knows there's a reason.
Gotcha.
And she's right.
Well, yes.
You know why she's right? She's Letty.
Because she's Letty.
So. Then they go to the Arctic.
And Russia.
It's the most Arctic-y part of Russia.
Well, there's lots of Arctic-y parts of Russia.
All right.
Well, you ever heard of Siberia?
Yeah, I have. I know things about maps.
Well, not where the Arctic is, apparently.
They go to the most frozen part of Russia.
Yes.
And then they destroy everything and contribute greatly to the melting of Russia and climate change.
And the ice caps, yes. But they do manage to somehow outrun a nuclear sub.
There's a nuclear sub.
Without snow tires, so that's pretty amazing.
No. They've got chains on their wheels. Did you not notice those?
Well, okay, but Tyrese does not.
Listen, Tyrese has a lot of problems.
Yes. Oh, one thing that I forgot to talk about on What the Flick is Scott Eastwood, who has been
whatever
who's being dragged into this thing, and I guess we're not going to be stuck with him for a couple of movies, and
probably, yeah,
like George W. Bush before him, another inferior son.
But he is a fortunate son.
A very fortunate son. Yeah. He cannot pronounce the word nuclear.
He cannot. He says nuclear.
He says nuclear like three times in 30 seconds.
All that growing up rich and clearly a fancy education.
Yeah.
Couldn't get you to say nuclear.
Apparently
properly.
Carmel High does not have a diction class.
I love this movie.
I was entertained.
It
doesn't reach the loony heights of 5 and 6.
No, it does not.
But it's still real fun.
Right.
And I have to say, I saw it in IMAX. That's how they have the all media.
Right.
And it plays.
Oh, yeah.
It plays.
I'm sure it does.
Particularly for the audio, for all that vrooming, like this movie is literally running you over sound wise. And so, you know, you might consider going big on this one.
It offers very little in the way of surprises.
Correct.
Other than really fun stunt work, which is why you're going.
Of course. Yeah. This is a spectacle.
It also offers very little in the way of character development.
Yeah.
You don't really learn anything new about anyone in the cast in terms of their meaningfulness.
Right. Well, except that now, because Charlize Theron has been implanted retroactively as the real bad guy of the last couple of movies,
yes,
we are now supposed to forgive
Deckard Shaw
for killing Han.
I won't.
Well, that's how they're doing
the
it.
Film, I know, and that's one thing I was fixing to bring up. They position Jason Statham, Deckard Shaw, as a person who is in need of and is getting a character rehabilitation.
Yes.
I don't like it. One bit. Here's why. He killed Han. Well, you don't kill Han and be my friend.
Not on your watch.
We ain't friends. So I don't give a damn how much adorable stuff they have him doing near the end of the movie.
Oh, and so much.
I don't want to talk about what it is.
So much adorability.
Because I got to say, it's pretty great.
It is awfully adorable.
It's pretty fantastic, the stuff he does near the end with this thing that...
You'll see.
That makes the situation adorable. And even though I saw it happening, and I knew what the movie was trying to do for me, and even though I was enjoying it, I thought, you killed Han.
I'm sure that a great deal of 9 is going to be devoted to talking about how he had no choice. He was being manipulated by Charlize Theron and meow, meow, meow.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I don't buy it.
Meow, meow,
and
meow.
And meow, meow, meow.
Exactly.
I don't buy it either, but that's where we are with this thing.
Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren pops up as Jason Statham's mother.
As Mama Shaw.
And because there is no such thing as getting Jason Statham to say English words in any other way than the way he says them.
Yes.
Helen Mirren pops up. And every other word out of her mouth is, oi!
Yeah, Helen Mirren is a Cockney tart, and she's having a blast.
She's dressed...
She's wearing leopard. Like too much lipstick.
But
and...
she's also got a fancy lady teapot in front of her.
Yes.
She's sipping, in her words,
a cuppa.
A cuppa.
She is having a gas with this thing.
She's thoroughly enjoying herself. Yes. I hope she comes back.
Oh, I can't see how she
I would
comes.
Like her to be in the next one as well. Role increased in size.
Yes.
Because here's the thing.
I want her to
you
be...
You can just keep adding human beings to this cast. Make the films 3 hours long. That won't
Who
bother
cares?
Me at all. This one is 2 hours and 10-ish minutes.
I want Helen Mirren to be at the barbecue that ends every movie with the Budweiser product placement.
Yeah, why wasn't she at the barbecue?
I don't know.
Why wasn't she saying grace at the barbecue?
I don't know.
I loved that. I loved how I don't think I saw Vin Diesel and The Rock in any one scene together.
Quite possibly not. And according to a story on The Wrap, producer Vin Diesel put the kibosh on a like post-credit button scene that involved
Statham
and The Rock.
Do we know why? Is he feeling left out?
Who knows? I don't know. The other thing that cracks
I've got so much invested in this feud.
Well, let's hope that...
That it continues in real life?
That,
yes.
Yes. And let's hope that Ryan Murphy is still alive in 50 years to do the miniseries. Feud, Dwayne and Vin.
I'll tell you something. I'm speculating, entirely speculating.
Of course.
I have no inside information.
Allegedly.
We know people who work in television and film.
Yes.
And we know people who work in television and film who have worked with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
That is true.
And he's a charmer.
Apparently so.
Yeah. How much you want to bet? Just let's go with me here.
Okay.
How much you want to bet that all that charmerism is just a smokescreen for ruthless?
Well, I mean, like, look.
Looking out for number one behavior.
Okay,
that's my guess.
Okay, I don't know that he's the bad guy in this feud, assuming there even is one. But
if you're not a peacemaker, you're one of the bad guys.
But B, I will say that for him to be like the guy to make the leap from pro wrestling to movie stardom in a way that no one else ever has and probably never will.
Right. Well, Cena's going to do it.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
But Cena's doing it as a comedy guy.
But so's The Rock.
True. Yeah. Okay. All right, fine. But anyway... But The Rock did it first. I think that, yes, I'm sure you do not want to be in his way.
That's my guess.
I'll say that much.
But who knows? This is entirely speculative. I'm inventing this thing in my mind.
Yes. The other thing that I find kind of...
Hang on. I'm not done speculating.
Okay, speculate away.
I love the idea that as the big man in the room, any other... relatively big man in the room has to remember that he's not the biggest man in the room. So here comes Vin Diesel. And my speculation about Vin Diesel is that he is as weird as Tom Cruise, but without the Scientology.
Maybe.
Think about what a potential complete weirdo Vin Diesel is.
Mm. Well,
and like with quirks and, you know, germ-phobe habits. You know, like the stories about Barton Lawrence and won't touch things. And
Eddie Murphy
won't touch things.
If it's been on the ground.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, I mean, here's one thing that Diesel...
Weirdness is what I'm thinking.
Not that it will have made him any less weird, but for a while there, Diesel did not have a hit... franchise outside of this one.
Correct.
However, Triple X was a giant hit in China.
Yes.
And did okay here, I think. And so, like, now he's at least got that going for him.
Right.
But, like, The Rock is...
Like, I hear he wants his own Groot movie now.
Oh, good lord.
Wouldn't that be funny?
But The Rock has been called franchise Viagra, and it's true. He's the Heather Locklear of action movies.
Right.
Like, he fixes things.
And when you have that reputation, you have that reputation, you have the reputation of being Mr. Charm, and you are literally the largest human being in your orbit.
Right.
What do you think that does to your self-awareness? Come on. This feud was destiny. This was waiting to happen. And I cannot get enough... And I hope it just burns and gets bigger and crazier.
So So yeah, lest we be accused.
Because they are never going to be unlocked
no.
from each other. This franchise is going on to make, you know, number 9.
Oh yeah.
And number 15. And number, they're going to all grow old.
Behind the wheel.
In these films.
Yeah.
This is going to be the American version of those Carry On movies.
Yeah. Well,
which I've never seen a single one of them.
And the thing is, like, well, okay, because now we have, like, Paul Walker died and they kept going. So now it's like, you're all replaceable.
But they didn't, here's the funny thing about that. They didn't kill Brian.
They did not. But they act like he was dead in the movie. They talk about him
as though he is dead.
With such reverence. Yes. And it's like, he's retired in Miami, I thought.
The idea.
With Jordana Brewster, who doesn't get to be in these movies anymore, apparently.
The idea that his retirement means, and we will never see him again.
Yes. He'll be riding the bus.
That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's, someone in this film should have said, yes, I just visited Brian and Mia in Miami, and they're doing fine.
Yes.
They're so happy to be out of the, they're out of the game.
Yeah.
But I visited them. Remember when we all visited them and had a barbecue at their big Miami house?
On the beach.
On the beach. And everyone was happy and wearing linen, flowy trousers, and
sarongs.
And even Tyrese was not insufferable that day.
It was magic.
Yeah, but no. The movie, no. The they movie, treat him like yeah, he's they, a dead
they
character.
They treat him like he's a dead character. It's very bizarre. Oy. But yeah, no, you're right. Those two were locked together for sure. So yeah, lest anyone...
For life.
Lest anyone think that we were getting any sort of like misogynist... thrills out of the Betty and Joan miniseries.
No.
This is just as juicy.
No, the Betty and Joan show makes me feel sad sometimes. Like, yes. Not just sometimes, most of the time.
Yeah, because I think it's mostly about how they and women in general are ill-used by the entertainment industry.
But these two.
These guys, however, are the literal cocks of the walk, and they're still, like, at each other's throats.
Please.
Allegedly.
Please, Vin and Dwayne, fight forever. It will make me so happy. Because the stories I hear that come out in the press, I'm not even hearing these from
yeah,
like
insiders.
These aren't secret stories. These are the stories I read about. I just think y'all are acting like a couple of little tantrum children, and it just makes me so happy. Like the big
yeah, a lot of strutting pop.
Yeah, well, what he did to me was me.
They're like the Desperate Housewives. You know they have to arrive on set at the same time because neither is going to wait around for the other one. Ay, ay, ay.
Anyway, okay, so back to the film. Let's be film critics for a minute.
Sure.
And then we'll go back to being enthusiasts.
Of course.
And talk about this for as long as we want. There's the acting in this one is not good, except for Charlize, who has all the funny things to say and all the stupid things to do.
Well, and
Helen Mirren.
Yeah, and the thing with Charlize, again, my friend who went with me and knows about these things.
Yeah,
he was like, you know, given that she spends almost the entire movie sort of like in a control room, basically.
Yeah.
Because that means they had her for a week.
Yeah,
they just jammed out all of her stuff.
Right.
It's like sometimes she's in scenes with Vin Diesel, sometimes not. But for the most part, she's in a room somewhere. And so, yeah, so they were like in and out, and that's a wrap on Ms. Theron, you know.
Right.
On one of our two Oscar winners in this movie.
In the middle of my flu, while watching, that may have instructed my enjoyment.
Good to have, certainly.
In the middle of my flu, while seeing this movie, I saw the trailer for Atomic Blonde, Ms. Theron's summer movie. Oh, my God.
Her other summer movie.
Oh, my God. Chills of excitement all over my body. Maybe that was the flu as well. But she is killing people left and right in this trailer while New Order's Blue Monday just bumps out of the speakers.
Okay.
In the movie theater. And there's no better song for killing people, too. There's really no better song for doing pretty much anything, too. But Charlize Theron killing people the Blue Monday, heavenly. I cannot wait.
Well, we'll see how it goes. One thing I wanted to point out, just that I thought it was kind of amusing. A couple of the YouTube commenters on the What the Flick review were...
Are you still looking at that?
I every so often.
What's your problem? Why? What is your deal?
I do it a lot less.
All right.
But this attitude of like, I can't believe you guys are reviewing this.
Yeah, if you're of that mindset, then you need to fast forward through the next like 15 minutes of this podcast, because we're not even half done.
No, but I'm just, the idea that we wouldn't talk about this movie because it's a huge deal and people see it. And secondly, the notion that they can't be good or that they're all the same. And it's like, you know what? Watch a good Fast and Furious movie. Watch like 3 or 5 or later. And then watch Need for Speed.
Right.
And then come back to me and tell me how they're all the same.
Yeah.
Because no. Like, these movies, as dopey as they are, have a real grace in the sort of just loony, over-the-top action. And they are a lot more fun to watch than the people who have attempted. Like, if anybody could make a movie this stupid, this entertaining, everyone would do it. And they don't.
They don't. I think one of the things that distinguishes this podcast from some of the others that I've, encountered over the years, is that you and I really sort of rep hard for the art house and the art film.
Sure.
And the people who listen to this show regularly, they know that.
We were going to talk about Graduation this week, but flu got in the way. We will get to it next week.
It didn't get in the way of this, Fate of the Furious, because,
Come on.
It got in the way of the new Romanian, Romania's new wave had to take a back seat. But the fact is that genre film, and that's what this is. This is a B-movie.
Yes.
And in the great tradition of B-movies.
With an A budget.
About not much.
Yeah.
But absolutely entertaining and well made as the thing that it is. Mm. B-movies, genre films, are never going to go away. And they shouldn't. They should not go away. They should always be a part of cinema. Where we have gone wrong as a culture is in making them the only thing we care about.
Right.
And so if you are a person who loves film, or you are a film critic, a film writer, a film podcaster, whatever you are related to film, if you only care about genre film, if you only care about action movies or superhero movies or science fiction or horror, maybe you should get out a little more often to something else. Because that's not everything there is. But when you're going to go there, you want something like this instead of something like, as you just mentioned, Need for Speed.
Right.
Which is crap.
Yes.
And stupid and cruel crap, if my memory serves.
I remember the stupid part. I don't remember if cruel, but I'll take
running over homeless people for sport. Remember that part of the film?
Oh, was that?
Remember that? That was Need for Speed.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie was just awful.
So yeah, if you have no interest in The Fast and the Furious, then fine. Don't let it make you angry.
Yeah.
Just let it wash over you.
I would also argue, though,
move past it, move around it, whatever you got to do.
Well, you were saying that if people only watch genre film, that they should, open their eyes a bit. I would argue that the inverse is true.
That is also correct. And that is a thing that plagued this movie for a while, but also justly.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Plagued this franchise for a while.
No, no, I'm saying something else entirely.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that if all you watch is the Romanian New Wave and like the super artiest, most academic and challenging film.
You're talking about something different.
Yeah, I'm saying that you should also open yourself up to genre film because there's a lot there to enjoy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this franchise did not capture the imagination of the art house people.
No.
Until
five.
And that's, there's a very good reason for that.
Yes.
Number one was just a disposable speed race, car racing movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Street racing movie. Sorry, that was where I was.
Yeah.
That's where I was trying to go with my mouth in English. Number two was a terrifically boring sequel to the first one.
Yes.
Tokyo Drift.
Number three.
Is in its own world. A beautiful, magical, hydraulic, bouncy world in Japan. And had only one cast member from the first two films show
cameo.
Up in a cameo. Yeah. Because they didn't know where they were going. They didn't know where they were going.
No.
They didn't know what they were doing. They were like, oh, we'll make a third one? Let's just wipe the cast away.
Yeah, Tokyo Drift.
Take it somewhere else.
Was practically Halloween 3 in terms of like, we have this title.
Right. And so it was only in later films that 3's plot and people looped back into the story. 4, after 3, was a great disappointment because the cast came back. But it still had that same self-conscious, self-serious snarl about it.
Yeah.
It's never fully lost that, but 3 gave you this idea of what the franchise could become. It got stylish, and it allowed for some silliness.
Yeah.
And it allowed for a kind of winking wildness that you didn't really see bloom fully. Until 5.
Yeah, 1, 2, and 4, it's mostly like glowering dudes and exploited women.
Kind of.
You know, like so many like girls in booty shorts and crop tops, you know, like getting nothing to do but like drop the handkerchief at the beginning of the street race.
Yeah.
And then 5 is where they decide, nope, we're superheroes now.
Yeah.
With cars.
And it was... 3 showed you what could be, and 5 became that thing.
Yeah.
And so from 5 till now, these films have been glorious. Addictive, beautiful pop art. That's kind of stupid in the head a lot of the time, but is so committed to its own ideas about itself.
They get the scantily clad street race thing out of the way after the prologue.
But it's still a really good one.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. And they can't ever abandon it entirely.
No.
But, like, they do it and they're done. And then they've got other fish to fry.
Right. So, so now you've got a franchise that has done what other franchise has done this? Where people from every walk of life want to go see these films.
All the quadrants.
Yeah. You know, I didn't watch the Romanian film because I had to choose this week. And I chose Fate of the Furious. Sorry, Romanian film. I'll get to you this coming week.
Also, you weren't doing a ranking list of the Cristian Mungiu films for the rap.
That's true.
You were ranking.
I was
the
ranking.
Fast and the Furious
yeah.
movies.
And, you know, as a serious film journalist, ranking the Fast and the Furious films is top priority for me. Hey, do we think Christopher Hivju is an attractive man?
Which one was he?
Charlize's red-bearded henchman.
Oh, yeah.
He kind of is. He's from Game of Thrones.
I figured. Yeah, he's, you know, if he weren't a ginger, less so, but... As is, I'm going to say yes.
I was about it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, hey, Game of Thrones. Good to see you here in the Fast and Furious world.
I've heard people ragging on...
Prurient there,
I've
know,
heard people
but sorry.
Ragging on Ludacris's acting. I think he's funny.
Ludacris is a delight.
I think he's funny.
Ludacris is a delight. I'll tell you who I hate.
Tyrese.
I hate Tyrese.
He's not good.
I just cannot stand Tyrese. It doesn't matter what film Tyrese is in. I do not like Tyrese in that film. And I understand his role in in this world, in this universe, is to be the person a who boob. Is mocked and humiliated.
Yes.
But you cannot mock and humiliate Tyrese enough for me. Especially when they pair him with Ludacris and you're supposed to, like, think of them as a Tweedledum, Tweedledee. And I don't. I look at Ludacris and I say to myself, Ludacris is the guy who helps you all figure out what's happening. Ludacris next to Natalie with the hair and right. She's British.
The tech wizards.
They're the two smartest people in the room at any given moment.
Yes.
And they're helping each other all the time. And they're just speaking in their own techie nerd language and helping everybody else figure out what they're supposed to do next.
Yes.
So to position Ludacris next to Tyrese and have them both supposed to be comic relief, equally laughable, that's not good.
And the idea
that Ludacris is great and a good actor.
And the idea that Tyrese is supposed to be like a competition
for anything
yeah.
or anyone.
Yeah. That Natalie Emmanuel.
Natalie Emmanuel. Who's great.
Yes.
But I've told you the recent, this is for LKTV, I guess. But I've told you the recent Wendy Williams versus Tyrese situation, right?
No.
Tyrese has been opening his mouth and sticking his foot into it lately.
Well,
saying slut-shamey things about women. And he's done it more than once.
Well, I've told the story about his whole weirdly homophobic
yes.
stuff.
Yes.
So
yes.
Go on.
The homophobic thing on the red carpet that one time.
Yes.
With him and Paul Walker.
Yes.
And the interviewer asked Paul Walker, if you were gay,
if you had a crush on a man,
which celebrity man would you have a crush on? And Paul Walker's like, let me think about that. I'd never considered that before. And Tyrese was like, no.
I can't answer that.
We're not even going to consider that sort of question as we are men.
And then Paul Walker's like, yeah, who could even answer that question?
Paul Walker, yeah. Paul Walker's like, oh, wait, yeah, yeah, man. Okay, so lately, Tyrese has been trash-talking women who like to have sex.
Just in general?
In general. Yeah. These hoes and skeezers. That's
oh.
Those are the words he used. I've seen the clip.
Well, I think women should respond by not having sex with Tyrese. If that's such a problem for
Wendy
him.
Williams cannot get enough of this on her show. Because, you know, it's all, the first 20 minutes of her show is all celebrity gossip.
Of course.
So she already comes after him one day. But then he comes out and says more stuff. So she goes back in.
Mm-hmm.
And she says,
to whom is he saying this?
Apparently junket interviewers. Like, he doesn't know when to not speak.
Gotcha.
And she says, you know, Tyrese, these promiscuous women that you're so down on, they're not sleeping with themselves. So why are you not talking about promiscuous men?
It takes two to tango.
Why are you being mean to women and not men? And she pauses and looks directly in the camera. And she goes, I guess Tyrese really likes men.
Oh.
Takes a sip of her tea. Punctuation wise. Audience goes, what? Now, maybe you think that's homophobic of Wendy Williams. It is a little bit. But I'll tell you something. Let's say Miss Wendy knows something that we don't.
Yes.
I don't know if she does.
As a hypothetical,
let's say she knows something that we don't. If she does, and he's going to be a bad person,
mm-hmm.
go in on
particularly
him.
Particularly a sexist.
Drag him. Yeah. By whatever means necessary.
Absolutely.
Drag him.
Yes.
So, for me, acting-wise, Tyrese has always been the weakest link
yes.
in these films. And just appeal-wise, I mean, do not find him appealing.
Because Vin Diesel is a terrible actor.
but he's consistent and he knows his groove.
No, definitely. But there's something riveting about how terrible he is. It's like if Mount Rushmore started talking. He's such a block.
Don't say things when I'm taking a sip of water.
He is such a block that I just, and then it's like, that I just find it fascinating. And it's like he is all presence and no charisma, but the presence is enough. Whereas Tyrese doesn't even have that.
Yeah. Did you ever see Baby Boy?
No, but you love to quote it.
What a disaster. And he's just pouting through the whole thing. Like, I remember that being the very first Tyrese starring role that really stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming home and having to write about it and thinking, who is this pain in the ass? Who is this guy?
It's like the pre-Lincoln Lawyer, post-Days of Confused Matthew McConaughey.
Right. Yes.
Like, ugh, this guy again.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway. I love Fast and the Furious. I really like Fate of the Furious. It's not as good as 5. It's not as good as 6. It's not as good as 7. But it's still pretty good. And it's still really exciting and entertaining.
Absolutely.
In spite of Tyrese. And in spite of the way Deckard Shaw will never be my friend. Because he killed Han.
That's going to be a tough sell. I don't know how they're going to pull that one off.
He killed Han. You're a bad person, Deckard Shaw.
And can't we pin the death of Giselle on his brother?
No, Giselle sacrifices herself.
Right, but wasn't the brother the one on the plane with the endless runway?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
So, yeah.
But no one forced her to...
No, I know,
no
but...
one forced her to, you know,
but if they didn't have
let
to,
go but if, so that if, Han
but
could
if,
live.
But if they didn't have to get that MacGuffin back from,
she chose.
From him, then none of this would have happened.
She chose.
Yeah. This movie actually drags in an old MacGuffin to look for a new MacGuffin.
Giselle gave her life so that others could live.
Yes, so that Han could live for another 10 minutes.
Listen, we didn't know that was coming. We saw him get exploded in Tokyo Drift, but we didn't know he died.
Right.
And because, you know, people in these movies, people get exploded and don't die.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've already played the amnesia card. I mean, I don't know. Who knows where else they've got to go?
So we both saw my entire high school sinking into the sea.
Yes.
Have you never heard of this film? Well, now you have. It's called My Entire High School Sinking into the Sea. It is from a graphic novelist named Dash Snow. Shaw. No, not Dash Snow.
Sorry, Dash Shaw.
Dash Snow is the late artist.
Sorry, I was getting confused.
Dash Snow is the artist who died. Dash Shaw is the graphic novelist who is very much alive.
Who is not related to the Shaws from The Fate of the Furious.
Correct. He has made an animated feature for G-Kids. It is... a comedic high school Poseidon adventure.
Yes.
It is about a boy who is a sophomore in high school. His name is Dash. Mm-hmm. And he's a jerk.
Yes.
His acne is gone between freshman and sophomore years, and he thinks that means it's time to become popular. The way he's going to become popular is by being a really super investigative journalist for the high school paper. And exposing things so that people think he's a hero. He does not actually care so much about being a great journalist or improving things. He cares mostly about making sure everyone knows how great Dash is.
Right.
He has a best friend named Asaf. Dash is voiced by Jason Schwartzman. Asaf is voiced by Reggie Watts. They both are working for the high school paper, but Dash treats Asaf like a sidekick, like an adjunct.
Yeah.
They meet the new editor of the paper, a girl named Verti, who's voiced by Maya Rudolph. And Verti and Asaf immediately sort of hit it off and become a little googly-eyed with each other. This makes Dash very angry. So he decides to shine them both on and go off on his own to investigate things. He comes across a story that is truly alarming and does need an exposé. Turns out that their high school, which is located on a cliff that overlooks the Pacific Ocean, is also located on a fault line and is not earthquake stable.
Oops.
And the administration is covering this up.
Yes.
And when Dash finds out about this, he immediately takes this information and starts announcing it to everyone around him in a way that suggests that he may have just made it up for the sake of self-aggrandizement. Therefore, no one listens to him. Then comes the earthquake, and then comes the entire high school sinking into the sea, and then it becomes the Poseidon Adventure, where Dash, Asaf, Verti, a girl named Mary, voiced by Lena Dunham, and Lunch Lady Lorraine, voiced by Susan Sarandon, all band together and try to convince everybody that the only way out is up. And they encounter many similarly Poseidon-ish things. Blocked corridors and fire. A school bus somehow that they have to climb through. There are sharks and jellyfish and you name it.
And 12th grade jocks.
12th grade jocks that are like apocalyptic, you know, killers now. Meanwhile, the animation style. This is an animated feature,
yes,
by the way. The animation style is everything at once. It's super lo-fi, super low budget.
It looks like it was done with markers.
It was done with markers and pencil and crayon and charcoal and paint and and you name it, everything. There's collage techniques. There's layering things going on. There's really ornately illustrated things that are moving through really crudely, roughly animated Beavis and Butthead style animation. There's a ton of Peanuts special aesthetic, yes, going on. It's a wild, you know, kaleidoscope of everything. And it's delightful.
I had a blast. I think it's really fun. And it's, you're right, it is, on the one hand, you know, you can pick out a lot of references in it. But you can also approach this not having seen the Poseidon Adventure or not having watched a Peanut special and still, right, just delight in what it is on its own level.
Yes. It is often very crudely rendered, but no less cool.
Yeah.
And it's all
intentional.
So. Ultimately, exactly. And ultimately, it's not just an adventure. It's about
adolescence.
Adolescent narcissism, yes, and adolescent desire and adolescent... you know, me against everybody, you know, kind of thinking. And, you know, what will it take to turn you into a human being?
Right.
Will the greatest life-threatening situation you will ever encounter in your life turn you into a decent human being? Maybe not. And it's really cool.
In that respect, very honest.
Yes. It opened this week in Los Angeles and New York, I think.
Yeah, something like
that. But I don't know. I assume it will come to other places.
Yeah.
It's
making its way around.
G-Kids, they have a distribution arm. Like, oh, yeah, they go to major cities. Yeah,
totally,
yes. I think they do. So look for this one. Is it streaming yet already? Is
I don't
it
think
day
so.
A date? It's
I
not?
No. I
okay.
I don't think so. And speaking of animation, we will be getting to Your Name once you get a chance to see it.
Yeah, the flu kept me from, yes, that. You saw Truman.
Yes. Truman is a Spanish film directed by, and I can't pronounce this guy's name. I don't know if it's like Catalan or something, but Chess Guy, I believe, is his name.
Okay.
He did a film that I liked a lot several years ago called Nico and Danny. It was a kind of a gay...
I saw Nico and Danny, yeah.
Coming-of-age story. This is about Javier Cámara, who is Almodóvar actor. He was in, yeah, Talk to Her, and I'm So Excited.
I'm So Excited.
He travels from Canada to visit an old friend in Spain who's an actor. And you come to find out that the actor has been battling cancer and has finally decided he's not going to battle anymore. He doesn't want to continue with the chemo, and so he wants to get his affairs in order, which includes finding a new home for his dog, Truman, but also dealing with his son, who is played by the lead actor from a really terrific Spanish movie from a couple years ago called Animals that I'm still trying to get you to watch, Dave White, that Marcel Forest directed.
It is.
It's in the heap, I know.
It's in the DVD case.
Yes.
Atop. Mount Unwatched.
Yeah. So it's a, I mean, it's a movie about friendship. And I mean, these guys have obviously known each other a long time, and they, you know, they have, you run into other people that they know over the course of the film. But it's also about, dying and about sort of making those choices and figuring out, you know, when to say when it comes to, you know, dealing with life-threatening illnesses. And it's a very moving film, but it's also very funny and very humane in the way that it deals with these big issues, but just also in the way that it treats these characters and how it shows how some people don't understand this guy's choices and why he's doing what he's doing, and other people do, and you know, and how much he obviously really cares about the dog, because it's like it's the one really long running relationship that he's had, although he's obviously also still close with his son. And there's even a cool scene where they accidentally run into his ex-wife one day out in the street, and it's really quite lovely, and it's getting a pretty small release, but I would say be on the lookout for Truman. It's quite lovely.
I have seen what may be my favorite film of the year so far.
Really?
Yep. It's the new one from Terrence Davies.
Oh, right. Yes.
It is called A Quiet Passion. Mm-hmm. It is about Emily Dickinson. And there's a part of me that wants to say that it's my favorite Terrence Davies movie.
Really?
But then I stopped and realized that every time I see a new Terrence Davis movie, I think, this is my favorite Terrence Davis movie. Because they're all my favorites.
I see.
Because everything he touches, to me, feels perfect after he delivers it unto my eyes.
I will be very curious.
What I think about the Neon Bible, the one I have not yet seen.
Yes.
Yes, I know. Every time I talk about him, you say, ugh, the Neon Bible.
Well, I wasn't going to mention it this
puke
time.
Puke and barf.
But then when you talk about how perfect every movie is, I'm like, you haven't seen the Neon Bible.
That's the one I have not seen. Okay, so you just calm down.
Fine.
This is about, well, first of all, Cynthia Nixon is Emily Dickinson.
Right.
And as a Miranda... I have a thing for Cynthia Nixon.
I've always thought of you as more of a Charlotte, but, you know, whatever.
Ah! How dare you?
Fine, you're a Miranda.
Who do you think you are?
I'm a Miranda.
Oh, you're a Miranda. Uh-huh. You're a Miranda and I'm a Charlotte? We'll have this discussion later. Perhaps we'll have this discussion on LKTV.
No, I'm kidding.
Because we're fixing to talk about the last episode of Girls on LKTV.
True. No, of course you're a Miranda. I'm just teasing.
You don't know. You're just now. You're just trying to placate me.
No, I was teasing you before.
Oh, were you?
And you fell for it
because mm-hmm.
you're such a Charlotte.
All right, back to this. The film opens with young Emily Dickinson.
Right. And incidentally...
Go on.
No, a friend of mine on Facebook who loves the movie and loves Cynthia Nixon said that they thought teen Emily Dickinson had too much of a Valley Girl way of speaking.
Who are all these naysayers I keep running into about this movie?
Okay, fine. Just wondering.
First, you show me this one review written by someone that you know. I don't really know him. Where he's like criticizing, you know, things that aren't in the film for for starters.
Okay.
I don't want, listen, don't nobody bring me no bad news about this movie.
All right.
It opens with young Emily Dickinson being dryly disobedient to her teacher. Because, you know, it's this is very 19th century Amherst, Massachusetts parochial educational situation where as much conversation about God is delivered from the teachers as actual education.
Right.
And she looks at her teacher and more or less denies the existence of God. Hmm. The teacher's like, aren't you going to pray? She's like, no. No, I shall not pray. I think it probably makes no difference if I pray or I don't. She's in trouble. But her father, Keith Carradine, he thinks it's just fine. Her parents indulge her in all of her headstrong pronouncements. Because she's not loudly rebellious. She's very matter-of-fact about what she thinks, what she believes, how she feels. You don't like it. I'm Emily Dickinson, dude. Not that she was Emily Dickinson in quotes at the time.
Right.
She labored in relative obscurity.
Right.
And over the course of her life, you see that she becomes increasingly cloistered by choice. She doesn't leave Amherst. She barely leaves her house.
Right.
She likes her life exactly as it is. While at the same time, don't give me that face. I'm
so,
trying to talk about this movie.
So she's a shut-in.
I'm trying to talk about this movie. We're taking this film very seriously right now.
Yes, yes.
So you go shh. You go shh right now. Okay. Shh, shh. With the face. Her life is constructed exactly the way she wants it to be constructed. At the same time, she experiences anxiety and anguish about everything she realizes, everything she knows she's missing and that she cannot have because she has chosen this narrowly defined situation for herself. So it's a film about the life of an artist and that artist's choices. And it's also about the tragedy of her particular circumstances. Having said that, it's also quite funny, intentionally funny, in a way that I've actually never seen a Terrence Davis film be.
I was going to say, that's
before.
Not his usual.
There's a lot of stuff in this film that's very funny.
Did he write it?
Now you're making me hang on.
Sorry.
Did he write it? I'm pulling it up. And yes, he did.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. The sister to whom she's quite close is played by Jennifer Reel.
Oh, I love her.
And obviously, you know, Cynthia Nixon's performance as Emily Dickinson is riveting in its control and her ability to convey a lot with very, very little, this entirely economical performance. That's all. She's sitting in a room, or she's walking from one room to another room. It's moving, and it's just heartbreakingly sad. Beautifully shot. If you live in a big enough town, if this comes to a movie theater, please go to see it on a screen. Mr. Davis never met a long take he didn't like.
We should explain for people who don't know who this guy is. We're dropping this name like everybody knows.
Okay.
He had a film last year called Sunset Song. He did The Deep Blue Sea with Rachel Weisz, not the one with the shark. He is probably best known for the House of Mirth adaptation that he did with Gillian Anderson. And he also directed he made his bones with two autobiographical films, Distant Voices, Still Lives, and The Long Day Closes. And he did an adaptation of John Kennedy Toole's The Neon Bible, which I thought was kind of a snooze.
Okay. He is about 70.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a better filmmaker in the UK? I say no, there is not.
In the UK?
He's the best.
Well, you're the one who's the nut about Andrea Arnold.
I love Andrea Arnold.
Okay.
But he's the best.
All right.
So, he can take a shot of a still room with people seated and start the camera at one end of this room and take the next 4 to 7 minutes slowly moving that camera across the room. Well, very small things take place. And you don't want to take your eyes off of it. You don't want to stop looking at it. And I've said this quality before in movies by other slow filmmakers, mm-hmm. where it makes you conscious of how you're breathing in the theater. It makes you conscious of your own movement in the theater. It makes you conscious of your own body's noise. When a film is invested this much in silence and slowness and the, you know, contemplative life of the people on screen, you have no choice but to participate in that. And it's the opposite. It's the other, it's another planet away from something like Fate of the Furious.
Right.
It is an entirely other cinema. And you must visit this other cinema. You must. Your life will be better for it if you do.
You're reminding me of a thing that I loved in Truman that I forgot to mention. There are these two sort of parallel scenes where he and the lead guy who's dying and the friend are eating in a restaurant. And the first scene, this other couple who are both in the theater come in and they see the guy and they don't respond. And he catches them looking and not responding. And he knows they're like, they feel awkward. They don't know what to say because everybody knows now that he's dying. So he like marches over to their table and says hi to them and sort of forces them to have this conversation, but sort of at the same time kind of lets them off the hook. And then later in the film, they're in another restaurant and a guy comes in, and this time the dying guy pretends not to see him because it's this, apparently the dying guy years ago earlier had had an affair with this guy's wife and they wound up getting divorced. And so he's like, eh. But then he finally decides that he's going to go over there and like introduce and say hello and apologize. And it turns out the guy's like, oh, well, actually, meet my girlfriend, and she's pregnant now, and I would never have met her if this hadn't happened. So,
right.
You know, like lets him off the hook. And it's just like, it's these two really kind of just gorgeous, human-sized scenes that are very relatable, I thought.
And it's funny that you bring that up, because there's, while you're experiencing the what feels to you like the tragedy of Emily Dickinson's life,
mm-hmm.
the isolation and the loneliness, and the fact that she was not recognized for who she was or her work in that life and how she died young.
Mm-hmm.
You also know that her work would not have been her work without that life.
Right.
So there's nothing sentimental about this. Her life, nothing about this film softens or sentimentalizes or makes sweet, that life. It just makes it very, very real and meticulously detailed. I want to see it again on a screen. You have not yet seen it.
No,
I want to take you.
I want to go.
It opens in Los Angeles next week. This week it only opens in New York. Am I wrong about that? My understanding is that it opens next week.
Yes, you're right.
In Los Angeles. Okay, so, y'all, go see this movie. You can wait for Fate of the Furious. If you live in New York,
it'll be around.
Fate of the Furious is going to be around for a while. Go see A Quiet Passion. People need to be talking about Cynthia Nixon come end of the year.
Okay.
This is an important film.
Do you know the weird thing about Emily Dickinson's poems?
Yes. Say it.
That they can all
it's going to stupid. It's a stupid, it, stupid, stupid thing, but just say it. Get it out of your system.
They can all be sung to the tune of Yellow Rose of Texas.
All of them? Or just because I couldn't stop for death?
I thought somebody told me all of them, and maybe just that one. It's just a random thing.
You know? I don't want to think about that.
Okay.
Actually, I did think about that.
It doesn't diminish the work in any way.
While I was watching it, no. While I was watching it, I did think about that in that one scene where that poem gets
read
over. It's done in voiceover. And in that moment, I thought, curse you, Alonzo Duraldi.
Oh, I told you this?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, my friend Rosalinda told me.
You're always the one that's trying to ruin everything for me.
Always. Well, I thought maybe in the movie, like over the closing credits, Katie Lang would sing it that way.
I don't like you. I don't like you at all.
You adore me.
Maybe. That's different from liking you.
Are we going to talk about Lost City of Zed after you see it?
Yeah, after I see it.
Okay.
And let's do our DVD picks, and then we gotta go, because there's things I have to do, and then we're gonna do another podcast.
Okay, fine.
Now that I'm feeling better, we gotta get back to work.
All right, well, yeah, do not make yourself sick again.
Listen, I'm gonna go to bed at a reasonable hour tonight. I'm gonna take more sleep drugs.
Okay.
Those are really what I credit with getting over this. I've been sleeping 9 to 11 hours a night.
Your body needed it,
I'm sure. On a normal night, I wake up 3 times, I have insomnia, I get up for an hour, you know, I don't sleep especially well. I'm a somewhat anxious person.
A bit.
And so, I really feel like the sleep is what ran me down. And I'll tell you, there's nothing better than a good sleeping pill, you guys. If you can medicate yourself every night of the week, you might as well do it.
Neely?
Yeah. Listen. You get hooked on dolls, so what?
Go take the sleep cure.
That's what I believe I have had the sleep cure, because for the past, again, about 48 hours, I've done very little but lie around, sleep, and when I've been awake, I've just been dozing in and out. But at night, I've just been getting good, deep 9, 10, 11 hours of sleep. Your body does all of its good fixing when you're asleep.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Listen, tonight I'm going to watch the last episode of Girls with you, and then I'm pretty much going to go right to bed.
Okay. Well, then do me a favor, please.
Yeah.
Whatever magical thing you have to do, don't lose the emails that I sent you for today's
episode.
No,
I won't. I won't. I promise.
Uh-huh. Great. Okay.
We're going to do that All Letters episode before you head off to Dallas.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All right. What's your DVD pick?
Tony Erdman.
Hmm.
Marin Ade, German film from last year. You've heard me talk about it a couple times here already.
Yes.
Nearly 3-hour German comedy about a... You shut up. You're going to say no words while I talk about this. That's my rule for right now. I've had all I can deal with you naysaying Tony Erdman. Can't mention the name of that film without you getting all harumphish. It's about a young woman, approaching middle age, I guess. She works as the worst kind of corporate drone. She's the person who consults with companies on how to downsize employees so that the company's shareholders can keep making money. If there's a more despicable job to have in actual life, that's the one. I can't think of what it would be other than that.
Well, I was thinking about what Clooney does in Up in the Air, where he literally has to sit in a room and fire people.
Fire people, yeah.
But he's doing it after people like that have made the decisions.
Correct. She's the one that goes and says to the company, okay, you have to cut this many people from here, this many people from here, this many people from here, and then everything will be fine. But you don't blame her for that job because she's stuck like everybody else. She's stuck in a world that has turned from whatever hippie idealism used to exist into, you know, get yours and go home and keep your money. It is a cruel business these days, living. And that's where she is. She doesn't have much choice. Meanwhile, her dad is from, you know, the baby boomer generation. The people who were encouraged to follow their bliss. So he did. And his relationship with the daughter has been characterized in her younger years by a weird sort of game playing that they've done together. Pranks. Constantly playing pranks on each other. And now he has retired. He doesn't know what to do with himself. So he kind of follows his daughter around and tries to keep playing pranks on her. Trying to keep playing pranks on her, even in the corporate environment where she is. He follows her to Romania on a business trip. And walks around with a fake, like a Tommy Wiseau-style wig and these fake teeth. Introduces himself as a motivational speaker named Tony Erdman. And everyone around her is saying, who's that crazy old dude? And she says, it's this guy I know named Tony Erdman. She's annoyed by him. She can't let him go, though, because that would be the betrayal. That she won't go. She won't do it. She's also still kind of into it. And so for nearly 3 hours, there's this back and forth between this woman who wants her life to be better and her goofy old father who is trying to tell her, well, it could be if you just ditch all this stuff. Neither one of them is really right. But neither one of them is really wrong either. And it's this very beautiful and moving, and ultimately, as you get to the final moments, this outrageous, you know, party that takes place. I won't spoil what happens. It's just weird and moving and one of my favorite films of last year. That and Cemetery of Splendor. Those are my two favorite films from last year. I love this movie. They're remaking it with Jack Nicholson and Kristen Wiig.
Yes.
Please see this German version before that one materializes. I urge you, and I also urge you preemptively to ignore anything that's about to come out of Alonso Duraldi's mouth. Okay, speak.
No, my position on this movie is well known, and
is it well known?
Well, to listeners of this program.
Did you write a review for it for the Wrap? No, actually, that was me.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, you should go read my review on the Wrap.
Yeah, anyway.
T-O-N-I, Tony Erdman, E-R-D-M-A-N-N, two N's at the end.
I have already discussed what a total snooze fest this movie is. Almost as boring as that lengthy DVD pick description, which you could have just said Tony Erdman and moved on.
I had to tell everybody again about it. God. It's that good.
That movie is
that essential.
This movie is as you said at the beginning, it is a nearly 3-hour German comedy.
That's right.
With all of the horrors that entails. My DVD pick this week is Fast Five. That's all you need to know. And Tony Erdman is bollocks. All right. As always, we thank you for listening. Go check out our friends on the internet. Bibbs and Whitney interviewed Joel Hodgson this week on the B-Movies podcast. It's a terrific interview. Check it out. And also check out their other show, Canceled Too Soon. They're doing some MST-themed episodes. They watched all the episodes of The Master, which turned up as Master Ninja on Mystery Science Theater. And they're about to do Joel Hodgson's HBO pilot, The TV Wheel. So those should both be really interesting to check out. Also, of course, go listen to The Schmoes Know and Dennis Henman with Dennis Hensley and Sewers of Paris and The Comics Canon and Fat Guys of the Movies and The Criterion Cast and Film Spotting SVU and Secretly Timid and on YouTube, Let's Gay and Paul Tran Bakerman. And you can follow us at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, and please review us there. You could also leave us positive feedback at all the places where we stream, like Stitcher and The Lounge and CastBox and Podbean and, you know, all the other ones. Hey, join our club, won't you?
Yeah.
Patreon.com/LinoleumKnife. You get extra episodes. You get fun prizes. You get opportunities to watch movies with us online or have Google Hangouts where we send you cool stuff. There's all kinds of things that we
offer. Oh, by the way, if you've already joined Patreon, be watching Patreon this week. I'm going to be letting everyone know exactly how club member prizes are going to be distributed in 2017.
Yes.
Some of you are new. And so last year, everything just got sent out haphazardly as it arrived. You know, the minute it showed up in the house, it went out. And that was a problem.
That was taxing.
So I've got a new distribution system set up for 2017. I'm going to explain all about it this week. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, nothing I'd said made any sense just now, and it doesn't matter. But now back to you.
And if you're interested in our fabulous black Linoleum Knife t-shirts with Linoleum Knife and white lettering on the front, we are selling those. You don't have to be a member to get one. Just PayPal us $22 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. If you are outside of the U.S., please email us first and tell us where so we can tell you how much additional postage is. I will be going to Dallas for the USA Film Festival at the end of the month, but if you're there, say hey. But we will be pre-taping a lot of stuff before I go, so not to worry.
Don't worry.
Well, we kind of dropped the ball on things this week because of your flu.
Well, yeah, there's a difference between being weak on a sick bed and you know.
Yes.
Going out of town.
Anyway, so we'll get that taken care of. Anyway, thank you all for listening. As always, we appreciate it. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. And we will catch you guys next time.
Goodbye.